Welcome to Deadly Serial. I am Lee Moffitt. With me, as always, is my lovely sister,
Laura Dedrick. Welcome, everybody.
Wonderful, wonderful. Good to be back behind a microphone talking to you. How you
yes,
doing?
I'm doing great. Took a little break. Sometimes you need a break. Mental health, that kind of jazz.
Yeah, we both kind of did.
Yeah.
We're juggling a full-time job and families and all that shit. And this doesn't pay very much.
No, let me just explain. Yeah, we don't do this for the money because there is none really. It's just a fun hobby.
Yeah, and it seems really easy. It seems easy. You just sit behind a microphone. It's really fucking hard, okay?
It's hard. It's a lot. And we do it because we love it. But sometimes it's just like, if you're not loving it, you got to take a step back because you're just going to get burnt out, you know?
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And we don't want to do that because we love this and we love doing it.
Yes, for sure.
So, and I vow now to never lie to my audience ever again.
We're not going
to
make any
at the end
promises.
Of every episode, I promise all these things. Oh, we're going to be back. Yeah, we're going to have 4-hour-long episodes. We're going to talk about this and that and the other thing, and it never happens.
No, yeah. From this point forward, we will not be making any promises of any kind.
No. Not anymore. Because who knows what the fuck can happen.
Yeah,
okay?
We have no idea what's going to happen.
We can have 2 episodes come out next week.
Right.
We could have an episode in like 2 months.
Yeah. So
who knows?
Who knows? Just stick with us. We'll keep putting something
cult.
Out.
It could be about aliens. It could be about anything. Who knows? We don't know what we're doing.
No, we don't know ever know what we're doing, really. Not really.
Are we off to a good start or a bad start here? I don't know.
So this week's working title is Scary Ass Kids, because I do believe there is a show called Kids Who Kill Kids, right?
Kids Who Kill Kids.
Kids Who Kill Kids, which is
kids
what
I'm killing kids.
Yeah. Which is, it stuck in my mind because I was like, oh, okay, we'll make that the title of this this episode. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's because it's an actual title of a real show. So
it's like
Scary
Time
Ass
Crime.
Kids. Yeah.
Yeah, Scary Ass Kids.
Scary Ass Kids. Kids are scary enough as is, but when they kill other kids, it's especially scary.
What scares me? It's terrible. You know, anybody killing anybody, obviously. But what scares me is kids killing adults. Like Children of the Corn type
that
shit.
Oh, scary. Yes. Or like the TikTok where it's like, the chances of your toddler killing you are very slim, but not zero.
But they're never zero.
Yeah, it's never zero. So yeah, like I have some, what I have, quick fun facts about kids who kill.
Yeah, let's talk about the youngest kid who's killed.
The youngest kid to ever kill in like the history of killing was actually 2 years old. I could not find really any information about this except that it was an ISIS related incident.
That could mean like anything.
It could, yeah, like they maybe, like, I have no idea, put a knife in to a toddler's hand and was like, I have no idea. I have a lot of questions about that. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say my imagination goes to like a million different places of how a 2-year-old could possibly kill somebody. And none of them are good.
Like throw a grenade. That's a possibility. Here, throw this.
I was thinking like strapping a bunch of C4 to it and then him just charging.
Oh
to
my
you.
God. I didn't even think about that, dude.
It's a horrible thing to think of.
A little, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Little kamikaze baby.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh,
all
that,
right.
Wow. We're really trigger warnings. Kids are killing kids here.
Yeah.
That was a little late. Okay. So I do have more information about the youngest kid to ever kill in the United States. His name was Carl Newton Mahan. He was 6 years old, 7 months and 26 days old. I like that. So this was, in 1929, on May 18th, 1929, Carl, who was 6, and his friend Cecil Van Hose, 8 years old, had a fight. Cecil took a scrap of iron away from Carl, slapped him in the face. Carl ran away from him, went home, climbed up on a chair. He took down his father's 12-gauge shotgun, which he kept above the door. Carl went back outside and shouted to Cecil, "I'm going to shoot you." And then he shot him. So he was the youngest murderer defendant in Kentucky and the country. He was 6 years old.
Yeah, gun regulations weren't really up to par in 1929 in America.
No, 12 gauge shotgun and a 6 year old.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So those were just like some fun facts, like I said. But we have a couple cases we're going to do this week. So let's get into this kid killing kid stuff. So this part of the story here is about Alyssa Bustamante. I always pick hard names that I have to Google pronunciation search to write out phonetically.
I mean, it's never a bad idea to learn out the correct pronunciation. But as far as I'm concerned, words are words and you should pronounce them however the hell you want.
Especially for this chick. Like, we don't need any respect for this chick. Yeah. So in late October of 2009, 15-year-old Alyssa Bustamante saw an opportunity to do something she had been fantasizing about doing for years. Killing. So this took place in our home state of Missouri. Holla.
Mm-hmm. Misery. Here we are.
I am in St. Martin's, Missouri. So this town actually had like 1,100 people in it. It was a real small town. But I figured we'd start with Missouri since we're going to pick on Florida next. And we always pick on Florida. So I figured we'd do one from our home state. So we have nine-year-old Elizabeth Olton. She wanted to go over and play with her friend Emma, who was Alyssa's younger sister.
Okay.
Okay. This was in the norm. Elizabeth would go over and play with Alyssa's younger siblings all the time, and she was good friends with Emma. On October 21st of 2009, Elizabeth had asked to go over to her friend, you know, Emma's house at about 5 p.m. And Elizabeth's mother, Patricia Price, told the girls that they could not play for long since Elizabeth had to practice for a play she was in. That broke my heart.
She can't play because she's got to work on a play.
In her mind, like, she would go to the play and just keep on living, and she wouldn't do either of those things. She's 9 years old, you know?
Yeah.
It's terrible. So Elizabeth's mother told her to be home no later than 6, but when 6 came around, no Elizabeth. Knowing Elizabeth was afraid of the dark and the sun set about 6:30 that night, her mother knew that she should be home. She wouldn't just go traipsing around the neighborhood after dark.
Yeah, in October.
Yeah.
Missouri.
So she called the Bustamante house to see if she was still there. Their response was, no, we have not seen her at all today.
Bum, bum, bum.
Ooh, that's rough.
That's so obviously, nightmare.
Yeah. So obviously her mother hung up and immediately called the police to report Elizabeth missing. And the police did really good. And within about 15 minutes, they were searching the area for Elizabeth.
That's good. Amber alert, whatever. 2009, man.
Right. We had all that. You know, we take it a little more seriously. Time is of the essence. Got to find this kid. So a third of the town, like I said, it was 1,100 people, helped look for Elizabeth. That's how many people were out there looking for her.
That's astounding. That's like the whole town.
It was a third of the town. And as they searched, they didn't find anything that immediately arose suspicion. Elizabeth did have a cell phone, so the police pinged it, and it was coming from a wooded area just behind Elizabeth's house. It was also, so it was like a neighborhood, but there's a wooded area in the middle, like a heavily wooded area in the middle of the neighborhood. So that's where the ping, sort of it, so their cell phone was when they pinged it. It was in that wooded area.
Yeah, that's the thing about Missouri and small towns,
mm-hmm.
is that in the middle of small towns, or at least somewhere in there, there's at least a decent stretch of real thick woods.
Heavily wooded. Yeah, in the middle of a neighborhood, there's stuff. Yeah, you can just have heavily wooded areas. So it, like I said, this was a huge wooded area like we were talking about, and it would take a very long time to search it. And at this point, the FBI came into the picture to help.
Wow.
Yeah, this was getting a lot of coverage. The FBI went to talk to the younger children and the Bustamante house, as well as search within the home, since that's where Elizabeth was supposed to be last. Elizabeth's friend Emma, the one who had asked her to come play with her, was questioned by the authorities. And Emma stated that the girls played and she saw Elizabeth walk home. So something happened between her leaving the Bustamante house and walking home.
Yep.
But later, Emma changed her story. And Emma said that while they were playing, she fell into a thorn bush and got stuck, and she had to call her older sister, Alyssa, to come help her.
Okay. That's trouble right there.
So
if we're getting inconsistencies in the story already
of an of a 9-year-old, so that shined a big old bright spotlight on Alyssa, you know, obviously, and the FBI began to question her. So Alyssa had actually skipped school that day, but she remained very calm throughout the whole interview with the FBI. And because of this, she was initially deemed not a suspect. She was just normal teenage girl, no issues.
Yeah, she's too young to pull, you know, a fast one on the FBI.
Yeah, she was super calm. But this changed when they found what looked like a shallow grave in the Bustamante's backyard, which is a little weird.
Yikes. That shallow grave in your backyard?
That's basically what they said. They're like, hey, what's up with this? And when they asked Alyssa about it, she just said she liked to dig graves and would bury dead animals if she found them, which is, you know, perfectly normal, perfectly healthy.
Sure.
I just like digging shallow graves. Okay.
It's fun.
Good times.
Play Undertaker.
Yeah. And the FBI found Alyssa's diary in her room. So the last entry had been marked out heavily with blue pen, but the FBI were able to recover some incriminating words off that page. They were able to find slit and throat.
Uh-oh.
So they questioned her again. So this time she said that Elizabeth and her were walking through the woods when Elizabeth tripped over a rock and fell and died.
Yeah.
Okay. And the FBI knew she was completely full of shit, and they told her that she should tell the truth since the autopsy would show everything anyway. They asked Alyssa if Elizabeth's throat had been cut, and that was when Alyssa answered yes. So she's starting to tell the truth now. You know, she's a minor, so she had her grandmother who she had been placed with when she was 8. Her grandmother was present during the questioning. And after hearing that Elizabeth's throat had been cut, Grandma, like, left the room, freaked out, obviously. I mean, that's a hard thing to hear about your granddaughter.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine.
Slit somebody's throat. So here's what happened to Elizabeth, according to Alyssa's confession. She had told her little sister, Emma, to go over to Elizabeth's house and ask her to come over and play. Once Elizabeth was over at their house, Alyssa took Elizabeth into the woods alone. She told her that she had a surprise for her, so Elizabeth followed her into the wooded area in the neighborhood. She actually took her into the woods about a quarter of a mile, and they walked for about 15 minutes hand in hand, while Alyssa the whole time told Elizabeth that there was a surprise for her waiting in the woods.
Oh my God.
So talk about another thing. So Alyssa had entered the woods at least 4 days earlier to dig a shallow grave there. So talk about just premeditated out the ass. Like, she had 15 minutes to walk this kid to a grave that she had dug 4 days earlier. I mean, she really thought about this and really wanted to do this. This wasn't like a, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely premeditated.
Yeah.
It's something she's been thinking about for a very, very long time.
Long time. So she led Elizabeth to the shallow grave and then brutally killed her. When asked why she would do such a thing, her response was, I just wanted to see the light go out of her eyes. She's 15 years old.
She used a knife? She stabbed her?
She strangled her first, face-to-face strangled her. Oh, she stabbed her 9 times in the chest, and then she slit her throat.
Jesus.
It was horrific. And then she buried her in that shallow grave. They also, in Alyssa's bedroom, they find messages written on the walls in blood. Part of it was a poem that said, I cut to see blood because I like it. I don't like to cut, but I can't give up.
So hey, that's catchy.
Yeah. So this is a catchy poem. Another phrase said, it was written in blood. It was written in blood. And guess what? It was written in blood on her wall. There was also... This is super weird. This is all in our walls or a bedroom. So there was a picture drawn of a bloody person that looked cut up. Like, it's a very rudimentary drawing, but it has the name Emma next to it. And Emma is her little sister. And it's just really, she's got some disturbing shit in there.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's go back to the diary, which was Alyssa's ultimate downfall. So she had previously written in her diary that she wanted to set the house on fire. killing everyone inside her whole family, which is, you know, super, super healthy.
It's very selfish.
Yeah. Yeah. It's messed up. Another quote from her diary. So this is once they were able to use like a backlight technique to get the old, she had scribbled out this whole thing that she, cause you know, sure, she confessed in her diary that she killed somebody. So she crossed it out, but they were able to recover it, of course. And this is what it said. I just killed someone. I strangled them and slit their throat and stabbed them. And now they're dead. I don't know how to feel at the moment. It's amazing. And she spelled it amazing. I know. As soon as you get over the, oh my God, I can't do this feeling. It's pretty enjoyable. I'm kind of nervous and shaky though right now. Okay, gotta go to church now. LOL.
Jesus.
Whoa.
I can't do this feeling.
You just gotta push past that and then it's quite enjoyable.
Get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. If it scares you, it's probably a good thing to do. So she would go on to confess details of the actual murder. She testified in court that she strangled Elizabeth multiple times before stabbing her, 7 times in the chest. I believe I said 9. Along with slitting her throat and wrists. Her defense basically said that she had a terrible childhood and the court should go easy on her. So Alyssa's mother was a drug addict. She had abandoned Alyssa several times in her life. She overdosed when she was 6. She didn't die, but it's that kind of life that she had. During that time, her father was in prison for assault. At the age of 8, her and her siblings went to live with their grandmother. And after that, she stabilized. She got good grades, had friends, and seemed to be a normal kid.
A lot of kids can bounce back from that kind of thing.
You know, it's a healthy, stable, boundary-driven environment, and they do a lot better. You know, you can turn them around after a certain, you know, before they hit a certain age, I feel like.
Yeah, or you can make them worse.
You can really, really fuck them up and go either way. But everyone said she was fun, full of life, but at the age of 13, she did try to commit suicide. It was then that she was sent to a psychiatric hospital for 10 days. After her release, she entered therapy and started on antidepressant medications. And she seemed better after this, but only on the outside. So, kind of. This was 2009, and it was like prime emo.
Yes.
Which I still listen to all that shit, like on the daily.
Yeah.
2009. So she was a little emo, which is nothing wrong with that, but she would post pictures on social media with like smeared lipstick that resembled blood. And she had the bangs like in her, you know what I mean? She was that type of stuff like that.
Punk.
She was a little punk emo girl. Yeah. She would post that her hobbies included killing people and cutting or self-harm. So she wasn't really into band or cheerleading or anything like that.
But this was before she was killing people.
This was before she was killing people. So there were
red flags. She's a goddamn liar.
Yeah, there were red flags all over the place. She even told her best friend one time, I wonder what it would be like to kill somebody. Like, that's not normal. I've never said that. Hey, man, you ever wonder what it would be like? No, what?
Just watch the lights go out. Yeah, watch the lights.
That's what she said. Yeah.
I know. It's crazy.
So the defense also said that her confession should be thrown out because of the way the FBI went about questioning her. And none of that flew. And Alyssa was tried as an adult and she took the stand at her own trial. She even spoke to Elizabeth's parents on the stand, which I always find gross. And I wouldn't want to hear what they have to say.
No.
I would not want to hear you talk ever.
But at the same time, it's kind of got to be done.
She said, I can't even understand what you guys are going through. I'm sorry for that. If I could give my life to bring Elizabeth back, I would, and I'm sorry. Okay, so the Olton family didn't buy that shit and suspected that she was being fed that from her defense team, which I guarantee is true. This girl did not give, she did not care. She is cold-blooded.
Yeah. So you think that, like, her lawyer was telling her to say that shit?
I think so, yeah. Prosecutor Mark Richardson argued for life in prison for Alyssa, saying these sentences are appropriate and fit what happened to Elizabeth at the hands of a truly evil individual who strangled and stabbed an innocent child simply for the thrill of it. In 2012, she took a plea deal to avoid the death penalty because, you know, we're a death penalty state. This plea also granted her the chance for parole. So that's a big deal. She's young. She goes in for life, but she has a chance of parole.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she
a lot of these killer kids, they you get it's 50-50.
Yeah.
They either die young or stay in prison for the rest of their life, or they bounce back and have normal lives.
Yeah. They even recently ruled that minors who are charged as adults cannot get, you know, life without the possibility of parole. They have to, now they're able to get parole. Like if you're 13, you kill somebody, you go in, it's not life forever. You get parole, which is what happened. Yeah. Which is what happened in this case and the next case. So she was sentenced to life with the possibility of parole, like I said, but under Missouri law, she will have to stay in prison for a minimum of 35 years before she's eligible for parole.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a stretch. After the trial, the Olton family sued Alyssa so she couldn't profit off the murder in the future. So basically, like, no book deals, that sort of thing.
Good, good, good.
Yes. Uh-huh, yes. They also sued the mental hospital that Alyssa had been in. The Oltons believed that the hospital did a real shit job of helping her, and they should have seen the signs that she was deeply troubled.
A lot of that shit is overlooked.
The system is so over flooded with people who need help that it's just easier to be like, okay, let's get this one out of here. You know?
Oh yeah.
It's like a cattle chute. I could go on about the state of mental health in this country, but that's maybe a whole nother thing.
Episode. Yeah. A little bit, every single episode.
That is very true. So why is she the way she is? Like, was Alyssa born to kill? Did the circumstances surrounding her upbringing caused her to commit this brutal murder? Was the mental hospital to blame? I mean, I guess in a way. Also, people should have noticed red flags of her saying on social media that her hobbies include killing people. That's weird.
That is weird. Definitely a red flag. I don't know. I do believe that they can be rehabilitated, though. Especially the kids. Because their brain's still developing.
And that really was the... Yeah, 100%. That was the argument for making sure that they were eligible for parole, because your frontal lobe is just literally not developed until, I don't know, like 20 or whatever.
And that makes a lot of sense, because that is about the same time that I became self-aware.
Right. That you came online. I was like, no, it's true.
One day at work, I was just like, oh my God, I'm a pink monkey on a rock.
I'm on a floating rock, man. I'm made out of space dust. Nothing matters. Alyssa is currently 27 and serving her sentence in the Women's Eastern Missouri Reception Diagnostic and Correctional Center in Vidalia, Missouri.
Got a fun name.
They need an acronym for that.
Yeah, they do.
WEMRDCCV.
Lucifer.
So that was Alyssa.
That was Alyssa, man.
That was Alyssa. She's not the best kid. Next one's not the best kid either.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Story number two. Creepy Chapter ass kids. Two. On November 3rd, 1998, 8-year-old Madeline Maddie Clifton came home from school in her hometown of Jacksonville, Florida. Maddie was a rough and tumble tomboy who loved sports and playing outside. She would also dance and play piano. She was just kind of a little Renaissance lady. So she did a lot. Bless her heart. After coming home and doing homework, playing piano, Maddie decided to go out and hit golf balls with a friend in the neighborhood. So his name was Larry Grisham, and he will come into play a little later in the story. But put a pin in Larry.
Okay.
Okay. So Maddie returned home that afternoon to tell her mother, Sheila Clifton, that she needed more golf balls since she had lost them all. And that was the last time her mother saw her alive. You just never know. Like, golf balls was the last thing they talked about. So
isn't that crazy?
You just never know. By 6:20 that night, Sheila called Maddie and her older sister for dinner, which was normal 90s kid stuff. Like, we did that too. We just play outside until it started getting dark, and then you'd come inside. Jessica, who was Maddie's older sister, she comes home, but not Maddie. So Maddie's mother immediately starts asking the neighbors if they had seen her. No one in the neighborhood had seen her. She just starts screaming her name. I'm sure she's terrified. The entire neighborhood, which is a cul-de-sac, they all started searching for Maddie. Her mother, Sheila, called 911. Even Maddie's 11-year-old sister was on her bike shouting Maddie's name throughout the neighborhood, which is so sad.
That's terrible.
I know. So there was a 14-year-old boy in the neighborhood who was searching as well. His name was Joshua Phillips. He would often play with Maddie despite the age difference, which is kind of weird. You know, she is 9 years old, or excuse me, 8 years old, and he's 14. So,
yeah.
But, you know, at the time, the authorities didn't think this was a big deal, and they soon turned their attention to Larry Grisham, the golf ball guy.
Prime suspect number one.
Yeah, this guy's weird. So Larry was a 45-year-old man who enjoyed playing with children. Not in a sexual way.
In the 90s, that was also kind of
Kind of okay. So yeah, so he had a record for Grand Theft Auto, DUIs, and 2 counts of sexual battery, but none of these crimes were against children. And apparently Maddie's mom could see them where they were hitting golf balls. It was like 5 houses down. It wasn't that big a deal. And she played with them all the time. He'd play both. I don't know. It was just weird to me. He's like 45, but.
Yeah, it sounds bad, but, you know, it could also be 100% innocent.
And it kind of was. I mean, so Larry said around 5:15 that night, he was hitting golf balls with Maddie. Like I said, 5 doors down from her house. He said she went to get more golf balls and never returned, but he just assumed that her parents wanted her to stay home for the evening, so he didn't think anything of it. He was taken in for questioning. He did fail a polygraph test, so that's interesting, but those are absolute shit. They don't hold up. Please don't ever take a polygraph test, ever.
I guarantee you, if I ever get strapped to a fucking polygraph test, that needle's going to be bouncing so fucking fast before they even ask any goddamn questions.
Oh my God, goddamn panic attack. Are you kidding me? You strap me down to something? I'm going to fail my name. First question.
Break the fucking thing.
Yeah. No. And just don't ever take them. They don't hold up in court. It's just to fuck with you.
Ask for a lawyer, people.
Yeah. Ask for your lawyer and say nothing. Especially if you're innocent. Especially. Yes. So they did search Larry's house 9 times. They really wanted it to be Larry.
Yeah.
They searched his house 9 times. They questioned him over 20 times. And Larry does seem to be the prime suspect, but he had an alibi and he offered his DNA. So eventually they're just like, okay, well, I guess it's not this golf ball Larry guy.
No, they have a process and they're pretty good at weeding them out.
Yeah.
They just question him and they ask the same fucking questions every single time, yeah. Over and over and over. And eventually, if there's any inconsistency.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But with him, I mean, I guess he just kept telling the same thing over and over again. They just didn't this long ago. After days of searching everywhere, the Cliftons went on TV and offered up to $100,000 reward for her return of Maddie. They begged for her safe return. They talk to her, you know, how they, oh, we love you. You'll be home soon. It's just that heartbreaking shit that they do when there's a kid that goes missing.
Yeah.
So during their appearance on Good Morning America, they found Maddie. So it was a full week. It was 7 days after Maddie went missing. Melissa Phillips, who was Josh Phillips' mother, sent him off to school and she was alone at the house getting ready for work. I guess she had, you know, like some time before work. So she had been telling Josh to clean out his room all week. He was 14. 14-year-old boys' rooms are disgusting, most of them.
Boys' rooms in general.
Yeah, they're just kind of gross. Melissa said there was a terrible smell coming from the room, but he could have left a bowl of cereal under his bed or something. You know, I mean.
For sure, yeah.
Doesn't raise immediate suspicion with her. So while he's at school, she decides to tidy up a bit, get all those missing forks and glasses that teenagers like to keep in their room.
Mm-hmm.
So she grabbed a trash bag, got started. She notices a damp spot on the corner of the floor next to Josh's water bed. I hate water beds. They're disgusting. His mom noticed that there was electrical tape on part of his bed. So she removed the tape, pulled the bed frame back, and found Maddie. So there were police all over the neighborhood at the time. They were still looking for Maddie, and they were also providing surveillance for the Cliftons' home because who the hell knows, you know, kidnapping or whatever. She flags down a police officer and tells him that she has found something very disturbing in her son's room. And she's hysterical at this point. I would be too. So the officer calls for backup and 3 policemen go into the house, into Josh's room. And there in the bed frame is the dead body of Maddie Clifton, 2 small feet stuck out from under the bed frame. So when the police questioned Josh's mom, Melissa, she said that she saw a sock in his bed frame and tried to pull on it, but felt resistance. So she had unknowingly tried to take Maddie's sock off of her foot.
Yeah.
But...
And I will spare you guys the 911 call because it's really bad.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. It's out there.
Expect. And this kind of thing freaks me out. I'm always afraid that there's a body in my bed.
Really?
Like in hotel rooms, I have to lift up the mattress, make sure that there's not like a dead hooker cut out, like in that
four rooms. Very good movie. I check for bed bugs. You check for dead bodies.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And needles. There's a lot of things you got to check. Especially here in Missouri. Yeah. But this is Florida.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But oh my gosh, this is bad.
It's really rough. The police had to inform Maddie's family that she had been across the street this whole time, a whole week, and her dead body is literally across the street from them.
Jesus.
So awful. Let's talk a little bit about Josh. Joshua Earl Patrick Phillips was born March 17th, 1984. He's only a year older than me. He was said to be a happy baby and as a child was described as a pleasure. He was talkative, made friends easily. He was active, happy, healthy. Nothing on the surface that would lead you to believe that he would do anything like this.
Right.
Josh's father was a super strict man. He never physically was never physically abused by his dad, but his dad had a bad temper. His dad was an alcoholic, which is a bad combo. So he was just super strict and Josh was really scared of him and always tried to do things that would not upset him. He was just very worried about the wrath of his dad. So we need to remember that.
Yes.
But he had a dark side that he hid from most people. So at one point he had actually been in trouble for hanging out with Maddie. Her parents forbid him from being in their house because one time the Cliftons came home and Josh was in Maddie's older sister room, Jessica. Jessica wasn't home and he had not been invited into the home, but he stole a picture of Jessica in her gymnastics uniform doing a backbend. So that's creepy. She was 11.
I'm pretty sure that he was sexually abused.
I think so too. Now this proves your point because he would also talk about sex in front of Maddie and Jessica. So the parents just really didn't want him around. They just had a bad vibe from this kid.
Right.
Understandably so.
Yeah.
When the police searched his computer, it showed violent sexual content, most of it involving young children. During the trial, it came out that Josh would break into the Clifton's house unbeknownst to them. It was alleged that he broke in, got into a crawl space that led to Jessica's bedroom, and he would poke holes in the walls. They found that. Yeah. They also found the picture of Jessica that he had taken from her house in her gymnastics uniform. They found that in his bedroom.
Wow.
He had placed a lot of the air fresheners in his room. He had a lot of scents going on to try to cover up Maddie, like Febreze and all that stuff.
Sure. Yeah. He's a 14-year-old boy, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, he's masking all of his pits and groin smells with Axe.
It's just like Axe, Febreze, and those pine tree air fresheners. Ugh.
You've pinpointed it.
Yeah, that's it. That's the smell. He also had a picture of Maddie. He had one of her missing poster signs hanging in his room. Among the evidence they took from Josh's room, there was a pair of underwear. They also found blood splatter on the ceiling fan. Jeez. This gets awful. Officers take Josh from school and they bring him in for questioning. They told him that they found Maddie's body in his bedroom. His parents were present during this and his father was urging him to tell the truth, you know, and he was really scared of his dad. So he told the truth. He said that on that day, Maddie came over and asked to play with him. He told her he couldn't because he had a lot of chores to do. But instead of doing his chores that day, he got on the computer and looked up porn involving children and torture.
Wow.
Josh said about 5:15, Maddie came home to his house while he was out raking leaves. And Maddie asked again if he wanted to play baseball with her. So he agreed and said she would have to leave before his dad got home or else his dad would be mad at them.
Mm-hmm.
They played ball for a little while. They pitching, you know, hitting, and he hit the ball hard, accidentally hit her in the left eye with a baseball. She fell, started crying and screaming. She's a little kid, you know.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah. At this point, Josh gets scared. He cleans the blood off the bat and puts it in the house. When he came back out, she was still crying, but she had calmed down a little bit. And that was when he decided to take her into the house.
Josh got scared.
He was terrified his father would be mad. He had tried to stop her screaming by putting his hand over her mouth and telling her to stop crying, but she kept screaming. He said he had to shut her up. He grabbed the baseball bat, raised it above his head, and hit her. Not once, not twice, but three times he struck Maddie in the head with a baseball bat. Later, the autopsy would show that these blows alone would have killed Maddie, but at this time, she was still alive and whimpering, so Josh took a knife and stabbed her twice in the neck. He opened the panel under the waterbed. He put Maddie in there. He took a shower to clean up. After the shower, he heard Maddie still whimpering from under the bed frame. God. Jesus. Josh took Maddie out of the bed again, stabbed her in the chest 9 times. He put her back, and then she was silent. Maddie was also found naked from the waist down. When asked about this in questioning, he said that they had fell off as he was transporting her from the yard to the house, but she had shoes on. So yeah. That doesn't make any sense. Like, no, you don't easily get your shorts and underwear over your shoes.
Doesn't land.
Also, her shorts and underwear were found underneath the mattress. They were situated in such a way that they were put in before Maddie's body. So right. he took the shorts and underwear off. But there were no other signs of sexual assault. Thank God. That night, after he killed her, he joined the search for Maddie per his father's request. He slept on top of Maddie's body for a week.
Yeah.
A fucking week. When asked why he killed Maddie, he said, "I don't know. I don't have the answer. Maybe I should get a counselor to find out what's wrong with me."
Let's get that going.
Yeah. The state planned to try Josh as an adult, and on November 19th, 1998, he was indicted in the murder of Maddie Clifton, which usually carries a death penalty, another death penalty state. But due to this age, he was only eligible for life without the possibility of parole, which they would eventually overturn. It took the jury under 2 hours to convict Joshua Phillips of first-degree murder. That is a very short amount of time for a jury to deliberate, under 2 hours. He is now 37 years old and serving his sentence in Florida. And yeah, like I said, he was one of the kids where they took off his without possibility of parole conviction. So, and those are the two stories I have this week of kids. Excuse me. Creepy ass kids.
Maybe we'll do haunted scary ass kids.
Wait.
I'm sorry.
You're making maybe we promises, bro.
I did not say I promise.
No, I find it super fascinating. I know a lot of people probably find it disturbing. They don't like the killing of kids. I don't like the killing of anybody, you know. I agree. I get it. But for some reason, this just really fascinated me this week. Like nature, nurture, premeditation when you're 15. It's mind-boggling. It's crazy.
It really is. And we still have a lot to learn from it.
Yeah, there's a lot of kids who kill. Well, there's a whole show, like we said.
Yeah. Damn. Still in the Middle Ages as far as mental health scientifically,
it's just now starting to become not barbaric.
Yeah.
And it's somewhat acceptable to have mental health issues, but
it's getting there. We'll get there.
It's getting better every year, I feel like. So definitely appreciate the support, and we will be back with a new episode.
Bye.
At some point.
Stay safe out there, people.
Bye, guys.